It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Thank you for joining us for a Thursday edition of our podcast, the question and answer edition, the week of Easter 2024. You know, Mary Langston, you're like half my age. So if you had told me when I was sitting around in the 1980s that the word or the number 2024 would come out of my mouth, I would not have believed you. That seemed like really far in the future, but here we are.
We made it.
That's one way of looking at it. Yeah, we made it. Yeah, everything on me hurts. What's not broken hurts, but yes, we made
but
it.
We're still here. I remember my grandmother used to say that. We're still here. I'm still here.
Yeah, well, your grandmother may be younger than I am too, so I don't know.
No.
I think everybody is, but
right. It's Holy Week and Easter is coming, and it's a special week for sure. And we have great questions again this week. So are you ready to get started?
I think so. I hope so. Let's give it a shot.
Okay. Fingers crossed. Here we go. We'll start with Brandon in South Carolina, who actually has two parts to his question. He writes about the Willis topic and he says, why would the judge only require Mr. Wade to be removed from the case and allow Willis the option to stay on? Does he have concern about removing her that might potentially muddy the waters on other prior cases that she has brought to the court, or is it more nefarious than that?
Brandon from the great state of South Carolina, those are three, as I count them, are really good questions. I'm not sure the order I'll take them, kind of stream of consciousness like Dr. Freud talked about. The judge strongly hinted that he doubted the veracity of both Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade. He used one of my favorite words, mendacity, which is a fancy way of saying lying. People lie all the time, actually. People fib about their weight, their height, their wealth. I guess people have been lying since Adam and Eve. The question is whether those lies have somehow jeopardized the ability of a defendant or the defendants to get a fair trial. Nathan Wade was an easy target. He's not elected. He is actually not experienced in criminal matters. He does not have a title bestowed upon him by the people of Georgia or Fulton County. He does also seem to have a pecuniary interest or monetary interest in the case. I don't know. I don't recall if there was any testimony, probably not, but I don't know if he's entitled to some kind of success fee or not. Sometimes in cases you get a quote success fee. It's kind of, you know, that's where it gets a little bit dicey for prosecutors. Success is doing the right thing. It is not necessarily getting a conviction. So, but I don't know what his, you know, financial compensation package looked like, but he was a much easier target for the judge. You know, Fannie Willis, like her or not, is the elected district attorney for Fulton County. So it's just hard for me to imagine a judge who's also elected is going to kick in that state, not ours, but in that one, is going to kick the elected district attorney off of a case for having a boyfriend who's also on the case, unless there's some actual conflict or actual prejudice. So he took, you know, sort of a Solomonic way out, although I don't know why people blame Solomon. Solomon actually did not cut the child in half, if my recollection of the Bible is correct. He said he was going to identify the real mother, but he didn't really do it. So when people kind of split something in half, they call it Solomonic justice, but that's actually not what Solomon did. But I don't want to digress. The muddy the water part, I don't know. I get what Brandon is referring to. You got a bad prosecutor, you got a bad cop, you have a forensic, DNA analyst who has trouble, problems, can be impeached, you worry about all the other cases that he or she were involved in. I don't think that's what was playing on the judge's mind here, and I don't think that's going to be a factor. This is really Donald Trump prosecution specific, even though he's not the only defendant. I think the political bias, it seems pretty apparent to me, that she has is directed towards the former president. Whether or not she was biased against, you know, some carjacker from days gone by, I don't see how the two are connected. So I don't think that's what the judge was doing. I don't think he was worried about like messing up cases she was currently involved in or had been involved in the past. I think it was just, we see it done in the justice system. You want to give both sides a partial victory. It looks better on appeal. It's truly doing what we accuse Solomon of doing, even though he didn't do, which is you split it in half. I'm going to kick Nathan Wade off. He's an easy target. I'm going to leave Fani Willis on. She's the elected DA, and the voters can sort it out from there. And I'm going to be shocked if it's not upheld on appeal. I kept listening for overwhelming evidence of prejudice of how, I mean, they're married couples that work in the same DA's office. So if you can be married and prosecute a case together, then you should be able to date and prosecute a case together. It really has nothing to do with the case until it does. And the until it does part involves money. And there was just enough cloudiness about the, you know, paid back in cash, reimbursed, that she did not unjustly enrich herself because of the case. I think whatever the judge did would have been upheld on appeal. He just decided to split it in half. And I think that too will be upheld on appeal.
Well, thank you so much, Trey. And thank you, Brandon, for those questions. Our next question is from Christopher in California, who writes, are these fentanyl-laced drugs coming from legitimate pharmacies, or are they illegally purchased drugs? If illegally purchased, shouldn't some of this responsibility fall on the drug taker or the person that has supplied the illegal drug to the taker?
Well, no, these are illicit drugs. There's no pharmacy involved. There's no compounding pharmacy involved. These drugs would be highly, highly controlled. Like other control, I mean, our drugs are controlled. You have schedule one through schedule, I guess, five, maybe. I don't know. Probably the whole world has changed since I used to do it. But you don't go buy these drugs at a pharmacy. You don't go to a compounding pharmacy. These are truly illicit drugs being trafficked by unlawful dealers. The issue of where responsibility lies, the issue of what responsibility the drug user bears, is an interesting one, and people have deeply held convictions on that. I think our thinking has evolved a little bit over the course of time. We had a first lady once who made drug use. All of our first ladies kind of have something that interests them, that they care about, whether it's literacy or the environment, or they just pick something. I remember we had a first lady who said, just say no. That is good advice for the first time. That is fantastic advice for the first time. Don't do it. Don't start it. Don't try it. But these drugs hook people, and then it becomes addiction, which is a disease. And it's a very difficult disease to treat. And there are lots of people addicted to lots of things. I would not say that you are addicted to caffeine, Mary Langston, because you're not, but you do enjoy coffee in the morning. I have not detected any change in your mood at the airport if you don't get caffeine in the morning, but you like it. My wife likes tea, hot tea. Y'all probably aren't the best examples because y'all don't have any bad habits. But people are addicted to nicotine. They're addicted to alcohol. You know, caffeine, nicotine, alcohol, those are all legal. And then people get addicted to legal drugs like, you know, I don't know, Xanax or hydrocodone. And those are, they're legal in some regards. but they can be used or trafficked or sold in an unlawful way. And then there are people who just use flat out illegal drugs in an illegal way. And that's what this fentanyl crisis is. Every aspect of it is unlawful. So, I mean, yes, do not use drugs. Do not use drugs that are not manufactured in a highly controlled environment monitored by the FDA. But, you know, the FDA doesn't monitor marijuana. And people use that. The FDA doesn't monitor cocaine and people use that. So it's the same with fentanyl. I have gotten to the point, look, I prosecuted a lot of drug cases in my lifetime, and I've prosecuted a lot of people who were on drugs at the time they used the offense. I don't blame the user. If people want to blame the user for the first time, they can. After that, I think it does become a disease, that addiction is a disease. I ran a drug court when I was a district attorney. I saw people try and fail trying to get off of drugs, and it took multiple times, and usually it took having a child or a job or both to get off of drugs. And some of these drugs are not nearly as highly addictive as fentanyl is. And once you're addicted for the rest of your life. So I cannot state how addictive some of these manufactured synthetic drugs are, and they rewire the way your brain works. I'm not minimizing the conduct of people who engage in unlawful activity. That's not what I'm doing. It's wrong to sell it. It's wrong to possess it. It's wrong to take it. But there are degrees of wrongfulness. It's not a defense to say I was under the influence or I was addicted. Those are not legally cognizable defenses. It is no voluntary intoxication is no defense. I cannot count the number of people who were under the influence of drugs or alcohol at the time they did whatever it was that put them in front of me. But addiction is a real disease or disorder or however they want to characterize it. And I think we'd be all better off getting folks off of drugs before they hurt themselves so they hurt others. But to answer your question specifically, these are illicit, wholly illicit drugs that are sold, possessed, used in an illicit way. And they're killing lots of people. And it's we'll just leave it there.
Well said, Trey. And thank you, Christopher, for those questions. We'll answer more of your questions when we come back.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
Our last question's from John in Nebraska, who writes, if the Washington Post publishes the one side story on Kim Mulkey and she sues as she says she'll do, does she have a case? Does the First Amendment apply to the media?
Well, John from the great state of Nebraska obviously is making reference to LSU head coach Kim Mulkey. She believes, is a Washington Post reporter who is on the verge of publishing a story about her. As soon as I heard Washington Post, I knew it would be not a flattering portrayal of Coach Mulkey. That's just my experience with the Washington Post, period. I started to say she was a conservative person. I actually don't know her politics, and I've known her for, 20 years now? But we'll get to that in a second. The question is whether or not the First Amendment applies to the media. Does she have a case? It depends. The First Amendment applies to government, like all the other amendments. I mean, the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition government for redress or grievances. Congress shall make no law. The amendments apply to government. They apply to Congress. So that's true for all the amendments. And then they apply to the states through what we call the incorporation doctrine. So the First Amendment applies to government, federal government, and to states. So then we move to the states where they have defamation laws, slander, libel. You know, for me to say something, Mary Langston, that I either know to be false about you, or I have a reckless indifference towards the truth, you are not a public person, as that term is used in media law, defamation, libel, slander law. You're not a public person. So you could sue me if I said something defamatory about you, which I don't even know anything defamatory about you, so I would have a hard time saying it. But you're not a public person. Kim Mulkey is. So then you have to apply this thing called actual malice. So it's not simply enough that the Washington Post be wrong. The Supreme Court has said for public figures, there has to be this actual malice, that the Washington Post knows its faults, or it fails to investigate the truthfulness in a reasonable way. That's kind of a simple way of looking at it. It's legally a little more complicated than that. But for purposes of this, public people versus non-public people. She is the Hall of Fame, national champion. She's a Olympic medalist, I think. Everything you can possibly do in a women's basketball, Kim Mulkey has done. She's a public person. Will she win? It depends on what's written. It depends on whether it's true. And this is where I have to confess my own bias. I have known her for two decades, and I dealt with the Washington Post for the 8 years that I was in Washington. Between the two, you can give me Kim Mulkey all day long. She is going to tell you what she thinks, whether you necessarily want to hear it or not. But she has never once been disingenuous with me. I have been at her practices. I have been in the locker room after her teams have played. I have stayed in contact with her. The thing about Brittany Griner, which there's been some illusion that they're going to criticize her because she didn't do enough when Brittany Griner was being held in Russia. I don't know whether Kim Mulkey wore a Brittany Griner shirt every day or not. I can tell you this. I can't tell you the number of times she called me. Multiple times. Calling to see what could be done to help Brittany Griner. So she knows, as you do, Mary Langston, that I'm friendly with a former Secretary of State, one in particular, a former Director of National Intelligence, one in particular, a couple of different national security advisors, the chairpersons of intelligence committees, senators of past and present speakers of the House. She knew all of that. So she would call me to see what could be done to get Brittany Griner home. Now, do you think the Washington Post is, first of all, wouldn't return their call, but do you think they've called me? No. So is that going to be part of the story, whether she, you know, quote, did enough to get a former player back home? I don't know. I haven't read the story, so I don't know whether or not the story is going to be defamatory or not. And again, I confess my bias. I have been around her in lots and lots of different settings and still talk to her. To quote her, she ain't for everyone. She is unapologetically blunt and candid. And if you don't want to know what she thinks about something, don't ask. She's certainly not a media darling. ESPN did a piece that was extremely uncomplimentary about her. They would never do a piece like that on the coach at UConn. They would never do a piece like that on the coach at Stanford, a coach they like. They just don't like Kim Mulkey. So, I mean, people in LSU seem to like her. The people at Baylor seem to like her, but her players seem to like her. The ones I've been around, they love her. They're players that say, they're players that she kicked off of a team for breaking team rules. They then went and sat out and came back to play for her again because they said it would change their life. So, between Kim Mulkey and the Washington Post, you can give me Kim Mulkey every day, all day. I don't know whether the story is going to be accurate or not, but I also would encourage people to remember there's a difference between being accurate and being fair and balanced. I mean, it is accurate. There are plenty of things are accurate to say. It is accurate for me to say, you know, the example I like to use to people, I used to say, it is accurate for me to say Mick Mulvaney pulled a gun on me. It's just unfair because the rest of the story is after I pulled one on him, which, by the way, I didn't and he didn't. But completeness and wholeness are part of fairness. So if all you do is call former players that are disgruntled, you're going to get one side of the story. Did you call her daughter? Her daughter played for her. I mean, did you call Odyssey Sims? Did you call Sophia Young? If my experience with the media is they go into a story knowing exactly how they want it to turn out. And then they do what advocates do. They present the evidence that supports what they already believe. They don't do what judges do, which is say, give me both sides of it in full. So am I skeptical that the Washington Post is going to be fair to Kim Mulkey? Yeah, I sure am. Just like they weren't fair to any Republican colleague that I can pop up. I mean, the only Republicans the Washington Post liked were ones that were dead or lost or voted with Democrats. So color me skeptical on the Washington Post, but also color me the fact that I haven't read the story yet. So maybe I'll be surprised. But I don't want to end on a down note, if it's okay with you. Do we have to end on a down note?
We don't have to end on a down note.
And it's not the questioner's fault. I just, I wish I had a nickel for every time I'm walking around my backyard talking to Kim Mulkey about what could be done to help Brittany Griner.
Mm.
And the fact that we live in this culture where if you don't, like, do it a certain way, it doesn't count. I mean, I say do it all. I say do it all. If you want to wear the shirt, we did stories on it on the show. I asked people about Brittany Griner. I sat beside her when they came for their national championship. For no other reason other than that's just where I happened to sit. And I love talking to her. I loved talking to Brittany Griner. It's the only time I've only done it once, but she came across as shy, but earnest and smart. And I grieved along with every other American of good conscience, grieved that one of ours was being held improvidently, unlawfully, just like there are currently people being held unlawfully in Russia. The whether you wear a shirt or not should not be the indicator, the barometer for how much you care. The fact that you're calling someone you know that has access to hostage negotiators, the chairman of House Intel, literally people in the highest levels of government to find out what can be done, what is being done. The fact that ESPN and the Washington Post don't think that was enough. They don't know what happened. And to, you know, whether it's to Kim's credit or not, she probably wouldn't tell them. She probably doesn't want me telling it. But it's true. It's true. So I did. But I don't want to end on a down note. So can I ask you something on a happier note?
You can, but well said. And thank you for answering that question. I know that's a tough one.
Well, if it sounded tough for me, then I didn't come across correctly because what I meant to say is between Kim Mulkey and the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
Give me Kim Mulkey. However, I am always open to being proven wrong, and I'm happy to read the story. I'm actually not happy to do it, but I will do it. But sometimes what you put into the machine is what spits out. And if all you want is negativity, then that's what you're going to get.
We'll answer more of your questions when we come back.
We're going to end on a positive note. You are
like a
person of But you and my wife are the most authentically spiritual people I know. The two of y'all are just the most authentically spiritual Christian followers of Christ people I know. So I want to end by asking you the significance of Easter for you. And then it wouldn't be me if I didn't ask one of the kind of questions that I like to ask, okay, which is, do you think that you would follow the teachings of Christ even if there were not a reward at the end? In other words, I think Jesus told one of the criminals that the Romans hanged beside him, today you will be with me in paradise. If he didn't say that, if it was just earth, there was no reward at the end, do you think his teachings are still worth following? So it's a two-part question. The significance of Easter to you, and whether his teachings are worth following, even if there's not a surprise at the end.
Well, I'll start with the second part of that question to follow your lead on that type of method, is I would follow the methods of Christ, even if eternal life wasn't offered at the end, because of many reasons, but mainly because they're just worth living for. It gives purpose for our life. And the first question that you ask, when I was little, Easter was actually a harder holiday for me, surprisingly, because I was actually terrified of anything in a costume, especially the Easter bunny. So, you know, it has changed dramatically as I've gotten older. Easter has a different meaning to me. People celebrate it in different ways, but for me, it's a season of new life, with all the beautiful plants blooming, showing their growth, getting my allergies going strong. But I think it's also a time to be still and reflect on the beautiful gift of Jesus and the hope that we have, knowing that he rose again, giving us new life. And going back to Israel brought it to life for me too with y'all. I think hope is super powerful. And each Easter, it's a good time to reflect and just be renewed by this hope that we have in Jesus. So that's kind of what it means to me in a very short way.
No, that,
what
that,
about you?
Well, you know, it's complicated for me because he'd already proven power over death when he raised Lazarus, and he raised other people from the dead,
right.
His disciples raised people from death. So he'd already proven that he could do that. I think what makes, and also he's not the first, nor has he been the last person to be unjustly accused.
Mm-hmm.
What does make him different, and what makes Christianity different, and what makes the belief structure, I think, different, is that Christians believe that he is currently alive. He is still alive.
Right.
So it's not just like temporary power over death, because the other people that he raised from the dead in the New Testament ultimately died. I think there's only one person who never died in the Bible other than Jesus, and it was either Elijah or Elisha. I just kind of rode a chariot to heaven, if my vacation Bible mm-hmm. school memory is right, which often it is not. So, but I reflect on the second one, whether or not, because the teaching, I guess it was G.K. Chesterton that said, it's not that Christianity has been tried and failed. It's that it's really hard and therefore rarely tried.
Mm-hmm.
When you go back and so there's somebody saying, pray for your enemies, pray for those that persecute you. Somebody asks you for a shirt, give them your cloak too. Go sell everything you have and give it to the poor. Those are not politically winning arguments to make. They're hard. They run counter to human nature.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what fascinates me about whether or not people would still follow if there was no reward at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe you when you say you would, and I believe my wife, I believe y'all would no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So
we would certainly do our best. You know, no one's perfect, but we can lean in and do our best and read scripture and, you know, learn from that. I mean, I'm in Numbers right now. I think Terry's in Leviticus. We're doing the Bible recap, and there's a lot to learn from the Old Testament. I think growing up, I focused mainly on the New Testament and Psalms, but there's so much to learn from the stories of the past and in the Old Testament. But it points to that teaching of the teachings of Christ and how we should walk in line with what he has. And even though we're not perfect, we can just keep trying. But what were you going to say?
Well, no, what I was going to say is, I mean, if you really are reading Numbers and Leviticus, no wonder you spend so much time in the New Testament. I mean, good gracious. I mean, I couldn't get out of Leviticus quick enough. I mean,
it was challenging. That was a journey in itself, but there is a lot to learn there.
I think I just have to get somebody to summarize it for me. Well, I hope you have a very happy Easter. And as I like to tell you and Terry both, I don't have any idea whether there'll be stages of heaven or not. I personally think that there is, and that I will be in the bowler room.
No.
I will not be where y'all are. I'm in the minority.
You don't like it when you say that.
I know,
so we're going to pretend like you didn't say that.
I know y'all don't like it when I say it, but I actually really believe it.
No.
That I am going to be like with some of my friends shoveling coal to make sure the furnace works for y'all wherever y'all are. So I may not see you up there, but I'm going to try to make it. And maybe y'all can send me a glass of water, preferably sparkling water, if you can.
We don't believe any of that. But anyway, we hope you all have a happy Easter, and you too, Trey, with your family, and take some time to reflect and just be renewed by the spring that we're getting to see here in South Carolina, and just the hope that we have in Jesus.
Yes, it is a season of renewal and hope. You've told me something I did not know. I did not realize that was a costume. I really thought it was an Easter bunny. So thanks for wrecking that for me.
I know. Thank goodness I'm not terrified anymore. I mean, sometimes I'm a little, you know, skeptical and want to walk away, but yes, it's actually not a real bunny.
Yeah, well, I mean, who knows? I don't know what you saw. I mean, you grew up in Greenville County. Lord only knows what you saw. I don't know. I'm not judging you. I'm just glad that it doesn't seem right now, currently, that it bothers you.
We've gotten past it so far. We'll see what happens this year.
All right. Well, happy Easter, and to you and to everyone else. And I will see you next week, okay?
We'll see you next week. Thank y'all.
Bye-bye. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.